Kira and the director and the delegation. Also welcome to the special advisor of the Minister of Police and also media and other related individuals. You're very much welcome. Today is the last day of our engagement in terms of oversight with regard to the annual reports and the reports of the Auditor General. So it's quite important that we use the day productively. Members, just again to highlight that we will distribute the draft reports from Monday onwards so that we can adopt on Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock. So members will have ample time to deal with that. Maybe before we start, let's first give an opportunity for the honourable members to introduce themselves and to take the delegations, and then there's just one matter in the public domain I just want to address and also give an opportunity to members to deal with that. Let's start from this side. Thank you.
Belang bakhaitso, lina laka kena enji mulibati, kile lokula komitee mekialo lebo.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I'm Zakele Mbele, committee member.
And I'm Diane Tola-Barnard, also from the committee. Morning.
The Deputy Chair, you're welcome to delegation.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. May I introduce my delegation? I've got my CEO, Mr. Chauke, the CFO, Mr. Abuti, and our parliamentary officer, Mr. Sabo Kupa. My name is Dantan Gubane, the acting chairperson of CIRA. Thank you, Chair.
Apologies for getting your title wrong. As acting and not as...
Mention one thing, Chairperson. We are a council of board members of about five,
yeah.
And a management team of about five, six. But as we know that we are a self-funding organization, so we always try to keep our travel costs low and make sure that people who come here are people who will more or less be adding value in our discussion, not that other members do not. So we apologize if we have not brought all the other board members to this meeting. So because in annual report, logically we should have all the full board members sitting here today. But we apologize, but we operate on a very tight budget.
No, that's fine. Honourable members, I just want to react to the release yesterday of the Statistics South Africa Victims of Crime Survey. And I will also give members an opportunity if they would just want to reflect on that. I think it is a concern that the study shows that South Africans experienced a 5% increase in total crime, and also that approximately 1.24 million South African households experienced crime during the reporting period. And then one issue that I think is also important for the Portfolio Committee on Police to note, and we will deal with it in the next few weeks, is that there has been a steady drop in the satisfaction with police from 54.4% to 54.2%. And the biggest crime for households, and burglary is the most prevalent crime affecting South Africans. So it's quite clear that the South African Police Service must intensify visible and community policing. It's quite clear. It's quite evident. And it also necessitates that police units throughout the country should also intensify operations, tactical operations, more regular vehicle patrols, more roadblocks in hotspots, efficient sector policing, and increased cooperation with community patrollers and community police forums, private security, as well as neighborhood watches to find long-term solutions. One issue that we also picked up in the annual report again is also the issue of response times. And community policing must be underpinned by better response times by police units to crime reporting and crime incidents. And the whole issue of detection rates is still too low in many of the categories indicated in the survey. And the detective services should really ramp up their efforts to deal with those detection rates. And then with regard to the public confidence issue, it's once again up to the cluster and the station commanders to ensure that there is the necessary operations, visible policing, regular patrols, and interaction with the community to deal with this issue. And I think also the issue was raised by members during the week, the issue of police reservists. I think the figure that was given was about 7,005. And I mean, that is a major effort that must be done to ensure that there's more recruitment to that, that there can be at least an effort to have more resources available. So it's a concern. I think we will have to invite the Deputy Director General when we have that special meeting in 2 weeks on the stats report, that they can also bring the survey and that we also interrogate that. We did it the previous year and it was very fruitful, and also to look at the different categories. Of course, their crime stats differ from the official stats, you say, but they take different approaches and they've got a sample of 30,000. But I think it will also be valuable to the committee to look at that. Honourable members, you're welcome. Honourable Colabon.
Yeah, Chair, I think it comes down to, and it seems to come down to trust. And civilians trust or lack of trust in the SAPs. If you think of the FIFA 2010 World Cup, everybody loved the police. They were everywhere. They were visible. Everybody felt completely safe walking the streets. And now all you hear is, I get calls, do you know I was stopped by a cop who said transfer money to me via e-wallet? Is that what it's called? E-wallet. And then he looked at me and said, no, I don't trust you, just go. So this is a common occurrence now. So we've gone from having an entity that was admired and respected, and in 8 short years we're at this. And it's all about trust, and what comes from that is that people fail to report. They don't report the rapes. They say it's 1 in 10, or could be much higher, but I've gone always with 1 in 10 from the NGOs. And also, we've got only half the people who have break-ins at their homes bothered to report it. So the stats we actually get are a nonsense, because it only works on reported instances. So I think it's a huge PR exercise that the SAPS has got to go through, but equally so, they have to have a product to sell. You can't sell an entity with crooked cops, people who ask for bribes, people who... To hear that torture by police has gone up by so much, the iPad yesterday, is horrific. How do you sell that? You can't. So it's a major, major problem.
Honourable Karabonat, Honourable Mbele.
Thanks, Chair. Those findings are unsurprising, because that's the picture you end up with, the natural outcome of the years of chronic mismanagement in the SAPS, and it's resulted in that understaffing, under-resourcing, under-equipping we hear about all the time and that we see through our station oversights. So it's really about fixing those fundamentals first. Otherwise, the SAPS are increasingly losing grip of security in communities, and it's just a vacuum out there that the syndicates will exploit. So management really must get those fundamentals and those basics absolutely on point and make that a system. Yeah.
Chair. Yes, throughout the week we were hearing very frustrating things about how the police are doing their work. But not only that, the fact that the management is not supporting the accounting officer to the maximum, it's also another thing that is deterring him from performing optimally. The police must really jack up to win public trust. Thanks, Chair.
To honourable members, we will also ask the Secretary to distribute those reports for members, and also the liaison of Stats SA, that they will be available in 2 weeks' time, because they will also give an input, I think, on the methodology issue with regard to the crime stats that we've asked for. So thank you for that, honourable members. We then come to the business of the day, and we will then go to the presentation from CIRA on the annual report for 2017-18. You're welcome, Acting Chair and Director.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, all honourable members. In terms of our overview, Chairperson, we'll take you through our operational review overview, as well as some key highlights, performance information, governance report, human capital management, financial information, as well as the commitments to improve internal controls arising from the AG audit. Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the overview, Chairperson, we would like to, in terms of the highlights, we would like to highlight the following issues, that once again we have achieved an unqualified audit opinion. And this time around, Chairperson, we have significant improvement in terms of the audit findings. In actual fact, the reason it is unqualified, it should have been a clean audit. We had only one finding, which unfortunately was qualified one of the key performance indicators that led to the unqualified. Otherwise, it would have been a clean audit. We've once again achieved over 80% of our planned strategic objectives. We have registered inspected almost 40,000, about 40,000 security businesses and security offices were conducted in the year. We had 375 arrests out of 63 operations that we had with our partners and partners. We're referring to your South African Police Services, your Labour Department, and all other partners that we work with. We conducted 1,324 inspections that are related to firearms. Those relate to companies that are in possession of firearms or that are licensed to possess firearms. We had a 62.2 increase in the number of security officers that have renewed their registration in the same year. And we also saw a 6.2% increase in the females, members entering the industry, which is quite something commendable. We also have 49% reduction in significant audit findings in terms of our audits, which once again is something very, very good from our side. On the financial performance side, Chairperson, unfortunately, it doesn't look that very rosy. From a revenue point of view, we had a 10% increase, which amount to 8.8 million increase in the that is due to the sales of goods, your ID cards and your certificates. But expenditure side, we had an increase of 20%, mainly due to operational cost. As you might know, that we opened quite a number of offices in the financial year. We had opened Mthatha office. We had a new office in. And in Mpumalanga, in Nelspruit, we had a new office in Polokwane. We've recently opened another office in Bloemfontein, and we are due to open a new office here in Cape Town, replacing the current one, smaller one that we have. So all of those factors also contributed. I think that is on the highlights. Something that is not on the presentation itself, Chairperson, we also recently launched an app. You will recall that with our previous briefing, we mentioned that we had a challenge with queues in our offices. Part of the solution was to introduce an app which would allow members to actually do bookings. We have seen some significant increase in the interest of using the app, almost about more than 3,000 downloads in in a month. And some of them are also global downloads of that app. So far, so good, Chairperson. Going up to performance information, Chairperson, I've mentioned that in terms of the performance of the program, we had achieved 82%, but in terms of the programs themselves, program one is 75%, program two is 100%, that is law enforcement, and program three is 23%. Out of the performance of the programs, on program one, the challenge we had was we collected less than 8% of the targeted revenue collection that we had for the year. On program three, we had just minus 11% on the target for achieving training providers that were targeted for the year. And we also had a challenge with an average reaching the average days by, we missed by minus 2 days in terms of registering businesses. On program 3 again, we had actually targeted to conclude one partnership, but unfortunately it looks like the planning was way ahead of time. The partnership was actually concluded, but the negotiations started and finalized before the target could actually be reached, so the AG couldn't accept that target. Specific to program 2, Chairperson, which is law enforcement, in terms of the compliance inspection that we conducted, we've seen an increase of to up to 40,000, as I said, compared to 35,000 in the previous year. That is total inspections conducted on security businesses, 6,253 compared to 6,100. In terms of security officers, we are at 34,000 compared to 29,000 in the previous year. On the enforcement side of investigations, we also compare in the previous year, we have a total of 3,100 as opposed to 2,500 the previous year. We have also a total of 2,500 as opposed to 1.7 the previous year on the business side. In terms of security officers, we have 630, which is a reduction of about 1% in terms of that the investigations regarding security individuals. On the criminal investigation side, Chairperson, we have 900 investigations that we contracted compared to 863, almost 1,000. We have 3,144 of them finalized compared to 2.5, so that's a significant improvement. We have 960 cases that were opened in total in that year compared to 846. On the docket side, we're also comparing the previous year, the total dockets for the year 2,353 as opposed to 2,000, so that's a marginal increase, 2,290, marginal increase, and we also have a marginal increase on the small businesses, 1,084 as opposed to 1,061, medium businesses, we have 418 as opposed to 461, and 848 as opposed to 771 the previous year. So these are the code of conduct dockets that we open against businesses that were non-compliant. Firearm inquiries that we processed in the year, and this relates to all the applications for firearms that are lodged with the Central Firearm Registry, and the inquiries are sent to us to assist in terms of the decision making whether to grant firearm licenses to security companies. We've received a total of 1,902 firearm inquiries that we received from CFR, almost 907 were not recommended, and we recommended 995, which is, I think, slightly above what we recommended last year. On the code of conduct prosecutions, Chairperson, we have, in terms of Regulation 3.4 notices that we issued, is over 1,902. We'll just give further details later. Cases that we finalize of the Code of Conduct, we finalized 201 of the Code of Conduct inquiries, and the total cases that were finalized through settlement is almost 1,372. My apologies, 378 as opposed to 1,384. In the previous year. We also have a regulatory subcommittee that in the main deals with looking at whether there's still compliance on the side of service providers that we've registered. The total number of work that we did in terms of cases that were withdrawn or based on annual fees, we withdrew 989. Voluntary withdrawals was 84. Withdrawals at the Code of Conduct inquiries 27. So those relate to the ones that we found guilty of misconduct. withdrawals for not meeting infrastructure. We had six companies that we were withdrawn, and we suspended 1,272 businesses for failing to pay annual fees. The cases that relate to specific individuals, we withdrew four individuals. The withdrawals also relate to number of misconducts that were found guilty. We also, in terms of the COC code of conduct, we drew six of them and we suspended seven. I think some of them are the ones that were in the public domain in the same year. We've reported earlier on them early in the year. Chairperson, I then move to statistics regarding registration. We're tracking the industry growth. As you might see, the growth is quite very slowly growing. In the past 3 years, we're still hovering slightly above 582,000 security officers in 2018 as opposed to 498 in that year. So registered security business, there was a slight decrease of about 1% compared to the previous year, and in terms of registered active security officers, a slight increase of 4.8%, which is mainly part of the reason why we were also struggling in terms of the collection of revenue, because these numbers are the numbers that we use in the main to plan how to actually build the industry in terms of annual fees. But we'll give also more details later on. In terms of the trends in the number of security officers, we're also seeing we're comparing female as opposed, as I said, there was a slight increase in terms of the female colleagues joining the industry, 6.2% in that slide. We're looking at the previous year as well as the year, the current year that we're looking at. I'm going to move on to industry training, Chairperson, but these numbers that we're showing are the numbers of training cost reports that we... But it just gives an indication of how much training activities went on into the industry compared to the other previous years. So by March we had 1,677 and we also by March to April in the same year we had 431,000 cost reports that were processed. So if you look at the numbers, Chairperson, there's almost similar numbers compared in all these years. But I think 2018-19 there will be a slight increase because we have also suspended the moratorium on the registration of new training providers, so there will be a significant increase. And I must also mention that these are the numbers that we that are also responsible for revenue of the organization, Chiefs, in terms of the cost reports. From a training committee point of view, Chairperson, we look at the number of instructors that we've approved in the year, as well as those that were rejected. We have received 154 applications, 147 were rejected, were approved, and six of them were rejected. One of them we required additional information. In terms of recognition of prior learning, we had 192 applications that were approved, eight of them rejected, and two of them required additional information. I will ask the Chairperson to brief us on the governance report. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Cyril. As we indicated, Chairperson and honorable members, we are a small board of about five people, and that is per the Act. And currently, we are running short of one person, so we're still waiting for the minister and through the processes to fill in that position. So what it means is that we do get overstretched as four members in terms of how we sit in the other committees. But we've been very lucky because we do have very active council stroke board members who do not miss our meetings, so we're able to always have quorums and be able to take decisions that more or less make sure that the organization move forward. But we also have subcommittees that are statutory, which more or less ensure that as an organization we continue ensuring that the issues of governance do provide the management and the organization with proper governance as we move forward and make sure that the internal controls are in place. We outsourced the audit because we do have the audit committee that sits, but at the same time we also have the external auditors that come in and assist us. So that assists in terms of balancing our combined assurance model in terms of our finances. But we are also helped by that the other committees, we do have external people as additional members of our governance that we get as expect to come in and chair these committees. So we are confident, Chairperson, that our governance model are the one that makes us as an organization to continue ensuring that we provide proper governance as an organization. But I would like to also add the fact that we do get called on by stakeholders to engage them as an organization. For instance, recently we engaged with the KwaZulu-Natal province around the issues of the proliferation of firearms, illegal firearms in that province, and the risk that it poses to the issues of the of tenders. I think people read in the newspapers around how the head of department, as an example of help, was held hostage by some people who were demanding tenders, and the private security industry was implicated. So through engagement, through those invisos and engagement, we've been in a position to more or less explain exactly how we enforce the law as CIRA moving forward. And we're engaging as an organization in terms of how we take forward and expand this engagement to other provinces. And we're hoping, Chairperson, that in the next MINMEC, we'll more or less be engaging with the other MECs of other provinces in terms of how we engage and create those platforms as part of our planning moving forward in the coming financial year to engage and just make sure that people understand what is our role as a regulator moving forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will just continue on the last two slides on human resources. In terms of the percentages in the staff composition of the organization, we have 56% in law enforcement, 32% in finance, and 12% in CRM. In terms of the numbers on law enforcement, we have 153, finance 88, communications 36. And the last slide on that, we talk to the equity, gender equity within the organization, 60% female, 40% male. Chairperson, I'll hand over to the CFO to take us through the financial information.
Thank you, Director. CFO, you're welcome.
Thank you. The next slide is slide number 29. As previously indicated, that we have achieved an unqualified audit opinion, and we had material uncertainty in terms of our going concern principle, where we have posted a deficit, and then we have a cash reduction in terms of cash reserve that is in our bank account. And then in terms of the audit opinion, we have an emphasis of matter in terms of our provision. It has increased to 55 million, and the analysis of this material impairment is in terms of the inherent nature of a funding model, where you bill people that are incapable to pay you. So that's why one of the reasons that we are proposing that we change our funding model, we move to a better funding model that would not put a burden in our financials. So if you look at our action plans, we have indicated that those things will be deployed, the change in the funding model, and then we have put a turnaround strategy for the current financial year to ensure that our going concern is addressed. And in the past 5-6 months, we have seen it working. We currently have cash reserves amounting to 57 million, and we have assessed our liquidity, and it's promising that we will close the books in the financial year in a better position. The challenge that we still have is the model that we're still deploying in this financial year. In slide number 30, we had another one of legal contingent liabilities, the legal actions that are taken against us. But we have assessed them. Some of them, they are not valid. But we, in terms of the law, we considering to leave them like that. But we have a new DD that is looking to rectify that so that we don't disclose much every year. And then the next slide is slide number 31. We have been when during the audit, the auditors selected two program to audit, and then when they audited program two, we were unqualified. It was clean. There were no significant findings. And then when they audited program three, one KPI was qualified. Unfortunately, if it's even one KPI, the whole program gets qualified. And it was also indicated by the auditors that there was improvement in managing performance information. However, in terms of document management, we need to intensify the actions and improve the internal control rate. And then I've already presented slide number 32. This is what I was speaking to, that the document management review of the registration process to ensure that we have documentation. And we also asked as the chair indicated, that internal audit.
Wait, do you know how to make an
edit? That's what you call breaking the bank.
You've got lots of money to pay for it to be repaired. Yeah.
Welcome, Honourable Mushlongu, you're always welcome. That's now a special entrance.
Okay. Yes. So, as the chairperson and the CEO indicated earlier, that we have a focus, we have deployed internal auditors to focus on program three so that we can vouch for our performance information. And then on compliance issues, as indicated, we had a compliance issue in relation to fruitless and wasteful. We had one major fruitless and wasteful in relation to SARS penalty. And then we have the one that is provisioned, where they say we should have collected the money due to us. But we, however, indicated that the model that we deployed is not effective. Those are the major issues that were indicated by auditors. And then slide number 34, this is commitment to management that we are going to review the Levies Act. We are going to encourage accountability where we have performance agreement that have the clause of accountability, and also the compliance checklist to monitor compliance of all legislation applicable to CIRA. And then slide number 35, the commitment continued. If you notice that the major challenge is also record keeping, that we committing, we have a dedicated document manager that is employed that is going to assist us in making this. We're considering also reviewing the contract with the company that is filing the document for us and ensure that there's accountability and the process is easily, the documents are easily achieved. And then in terms of the financial, we also say we go into regular and accurate, make sure that we have review our financials, we ensure that accurate documentation and complete financial records are available in time. And then slide number 36, it's our financial position. Our financial position, we have a 8% increase in terms of non-current assets due to the assets that we bought for our new offices. And then under intangible asset, we have 38% of amortization, where you amortize your intangible asset on yearly basis. And then operating lease liability is because of our, it's under the non-current liabilities. It's when you have those leases, then you classify them as lease liabilities for the financial year. And then
One major thing that we should notice here is that we have a retained deficit of 4041, where it has an impact on our going concern issue. Slide 37, we indicating our revenue and expenditure trend. As previously indicated by the director, that we revenue has increased by 10% and expenditure has increased by 20%. You can see that there's a 10% difference between the two. And in the previous year, we were funding ourselves through the surplus from other years. But if you look at the current year, the surplus has been depleted. That's why now we can see that the model is no longer effective. And we've also deployed cost containment measures to ensure that we don't the expenditure doesn't grow as much as it is, but sometimes it's very difficult to compromise the service delivery looking at that. But our main objective is to address the funding model so that we are balancing the jaws equilibrium. And then on the slide number 38, we have cash flow. You can see there at the end where we have 6.7. There is not 6719. You can see that we, if you compare the other years, we are 20 million less. So you can see that every year we're funding ourselves with the 50 million from the previous year. So our cash flow is shaky, but through the help of the council and the financial FinCo, we have developed a turnaround strategy. We have put measures in place to ensure that this year we close our books in a surplus. However, going forward, the model, because if you look at the finances, we can fund ourselves. What causes the going concern issue is it's provisions. It's those items that you don't, in terms of the financial transaction, like provision, it's something that you are not going to pay, but you must provide for. The depreciation is those that financial items that you must include in your books. So if you just operate like using the graph, you'll be able to pay your things. But once you put those things, assumptions, then you notice that your provision are taking a toll on you. And in order to eliminate your provisions, you must address your funding model. I think with those, I'll end. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe just a few things. From the Portfolio Committee on Police, we believe the AG is a very important institution. The Auditor General sets the tone and the framework for reporting and also his findings. And we believe departments and entities should honor those findings and decisions. We've seen this week a very interesting trend of the three other departments that appear before us. The one department gave very long technical and long reasons why they didn't subscribe to the AG's prescripts and the PFMA and, you know, definition problems. One other department blamed other entities, although they were part of the entity. Another department blamed another department for their own internal control deficiencies. So this morning, ignore is maybe the issue on the table, not dealing with that things. But we must deal with that, we must confront it. And for us it's very important, if we look at what is the AG saying about CIRA, and I've got a bit of a concern with the role of the board, and I'll come to that. Now, if we look at the assurance model of the AG that was provided to this committee, green means provides assurance, yellow provides some assurance, and of course red is providing limited assurance. Now, in the case of CIRA, senior management and the accounting authority, or the executive authority, the accounting authority, that's the board, is on a yellow. Internal audit is on green, and the audit committee is on green. Now, if we look at what the Auditor General is saying on page 110, and I want the acting chair then to respond, because if we see what happened in the economic sector with the SOEs, when boards and governance went out of the window, so went also performance. Now, the Auditor General says the following: the accounting authority inadequately review the annual performance report. For accurate and complete reporting prior for submission for audit purposes and as a result contained numerous misstatements. This was mainly due to insufficient systems and processes not being in place to provide adequate, accurate, valid and complete audit evidence. Then the accounting authority exercised inadequate oversight responsibility regarding performance reporting and compliance as well as related internal controls. Furthermore, the accounting authority inadequately monitored the implementation of the audit action plan developed to ensure that internal control deficiency identified in the prior years were addressed. So that is a major issue that the Auditor General raised. I mean, its internal control issues, its core business, but the board is not really taking that heads on, and I want to get an indication. We know that the former chair left. We heard the argument of it's a small board, but there is certain duties and responsibilities with the board of CEDA. And unless those issues are addressed, we're not going to see a turnaround, because we need to sharpen internal control and consequent management. Then the other issue I want to raise is the issue of the financial health. Now, it's the second year in a row that there's material uncertainty. Now, we've heard the arguments before, the finance model, we'll come to this, but the reality is next year is going to be the third year if there's again a decrease in income. So, and a key concern identified by the Auditor General, and I want to maybe the Director must also respond to that. The Auditor General said to the committee, management should enhance timely remedial action to improve the revenue management at CEDA, particularly focusing on the debt collection period and austerity measures. The entity has a high debt collection period of 120 days before impairment. So on the issue of austerity measures, we heard now today there's a huge rollout of new offices and all those things. But the AG is really warning us. We must look at austerity measures, we must look at debt collection, but the biggest issue is the financial viability model, because if you've got that next year again, it's the third year in a row. And as an oversight committee from Parliament, we can't accept it. We can't have what we have in the economic cluster with the SOEs. We can't. So we want to hear today assurances. Otherwise, we're going to make very, very strict recommendations to the minister. So let's hear. Let's go to the members. Honourable Abadji.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first congratulate you in obtaining the unqualified audit. And just to say, you can go for the clean one. My first question, what is the progress in the accreditation process for security training services? My next one, tell us about the deployment of your female security guards. What do they do? The next one, to what can the 18% increase in the number of finalized investigations be attributed to? My next one is the favorite one that, you know, tell us about your Acadia building. What is the status? The next one, what are the reasons for the firearms that were not recommended? My last one, I had you touching on the moratorium, and I want to put it as a question again. Tell us of the moratorium on the grades and training that you have imposed. Thanks, Chair.
Much, Honourable Mishlongu.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, one complaint that I've heard in recent months from some medium-sized security firms is that, at least in some areas, CEDA is seen to do disproportionate inspection and enforcement on the registered firms, and so they get sanctioned with fines on sort of technical infractions, even though they are compliant with being registered. But they pay less attention to unregistered firms who are operating and sort of to identify and to close them down. And so they obviously undercut them in the market because they can come in cheaper without the compliance costs. But they say that when they report these unregistered firms, serial officials seem to disregard them because the whistleblowing is seen as the registered firms trying to undermine potential competitors and so trying to, like, you know, smear their name. So then it seems to be a gridlock where there seems to be this real grievance on the part of registered, and it's really the sort of smaller, medium-sized, often operating in colored or Indian communities. And they say that they're being undercut by the unregistered firms, and no one's listening to them because they are seen to have malefides in their motivation for laying the complaints. So is management aware of this grievance out there, and what ways could there be to address that? And then my next question relates to the findings on page 110 of the annual report. So the chair asked about findings 33 to 35 on leadership. Mine are on the next three findings, 36 to 38, about record management and record keeping, and the adverse finding that the entity did not have proper systems to maintain information and didn't have adequate or didn't implement proper record keeping to ensure complete, relevant, accurate information. So, I mean, this speaks to some fundamental basics that are essential for the core business of CIRA, having to manage and update all those reports and other information. So I guess the first question is, what kind of document management or record keeping system has been in place so far if the AG finding is that there wasn't proper and adequate framework in place? And linked to that, does this finding speak to any shortcomings in your IT systems and infrastructure? Because I'm sure that an IT solution exists out there that would meet CIRA's needs and thus minimize the risk of these adverse audit outcomes, because the automation and the way that it's set up means those mistakes don't get made, or if they are made erroneously, it flags it to be corrected long before the audit comes. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bailey. Honourable Kalabar.
Thank you, Chair. I think what CIRA has to explain is the fact that, as the Chair was pointing out, this decrease, it's now a trend. We're talking about a three-year decrease, which means we're looking to see another one in another year. I mean, how far down can it go? Yes, the money coming in has gone up slightly, but that seems to be down to paraphernalia that you now sell. So every year, as far back as I can remember, there have been issues with collection of your money. I just don't understand why it's still an issue. The Auditor General says you still haven't taken adequate steps to collect the money due to you. They're talking about Section 5117B of the PFMA and Treasury regulations, and we're seeing, you know, your surplus has gone down dramatically. In another year, you'll be nowhere. So it's a huge problem, but I'm not surprised at the outcome. I wrote to you personally on the 5th of June. I tested your system. I put in a complaint through your complaints line, and I got an immediate request for further details. They actually asked me if I could supply you with the ID number of a person who I just asked, is this business registered with you? And 4 months later, still nothing, radio silence. So if I can't get information out of you, no one can get information. So why do you have a complaints line? You might as well shut it down. because people aren't getting any information from you. And people who are running private security companies that are unregistered and who are, in some instances, and certainly in this case, taking money up front from numerous people and not delivering anything, just disappearing, I mean, that sort of person should be dealt with. And 4 months later, nothing. We've heard about your record system. I just don't understand. Year after year after year after year, and we're told the record system doesn't work, it doesn't work, it's not keep. Why? That's your job. You should be keeping records of the companies and taking money from them. I mean, first of all, many years ago you had millions came in and you didn't know who it came from. So that took years to sort out because your system was so bad you actually didn't know who was paying you money. And now it's still a mess. I don't know. I'm very depressed. Chair, maybe we must start with them next year. To end the full week on a sad note like this is not good. So, two last ones. The legal action against you, of course, continues. Every year we see you, it's still continuing. Drags on. Is there an end in sight? Are we kind of getting to the end of this? And my fear is the impact it may have on the proposed new annual fee model, because I don't think you can go anywhere until such time as the court cases are dealt with. And finally, how far along are you in the process in terms of the CIRA amendment bill?
Thank you, members. We will go then to the Acting Chairperson and Director for the responses. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks, honourable members. And I hope our answers will lift the spirit of the honourable members. Coming straight to your question, Chairperson, and the issues raised by the AG, you'll note that all organizations that are young, like CIRA, they go through pains of strengthening their own systems. And there have been one worry that one had when we came on board in terms of the role of the board vis-a-vis the management, because at a certain point of life of CIRA, a decision was taken whereby the chairperson was full-time. So we took a very conscious decision as this board that it's important that we draw a line around those issues, because you never know in terms of how to empower the management to do its own work and make sure that we are then able as a board to hold it accountable. So we took a decision that moving forward, we are not going to have a chairperson who's full-time, thus empowering the management and be able to hold it accountable in terms of delivering on its own work. So as we look at the horizon, we're hoping that when we come back to account in the next financial year, we'll be in a position to say that because management could not deliver on this, we are in a position to take responsibility. And that's the engagement we're having with management in terms of empowering them so that we don't have some gray area around the role of the board vis-a-vis the management.
But Acting Chair, the dilemma I have with that argument is there is an act, there's the role of the board in terms of the TFMA, there's the role for the executive authority, the accounting authority. So there can't be any uncertainty. And in previous presentations to the committee, there was indication of board committees. So are you saying those board committees are dysfunctional? I just want to get a sense of that.
My point was that we can have those committees, but to find that in terms of accountability, there will always be grey areas. If at the end of the day, some of the decisions must be taken by a full-time chairperson when he engages on a daily basis with management. So we are working on that, and we take full responsibility on issues that the AG have raised, that it's important that those issues are addressed. But I want to point out that it's very, very important that the issue that the CEO will raise around the issue of how we collect and change the levies will help us moving forward. Because if you look at the presentation on slide number 16, you'll see that in terms of registration suspended, people have been, the issue of the huge numbers of 1,270 cases is around the issue of the annual fees. And it tells you that that's where the major challenge that SIRA faces, that you do have a large number of companies that are registered with us, where even if we do whatever we like, we'll never be able to collect the debt that we have with them. And we have to write off. And now even if we use this heuristic of suspending them, are we addressing the problem or not? Because the model of finance that we use or we operate is really antiquated. And we are saying that it's critical. I think the CEO will tell us where we are in terms of the Levies Act, and we think that we have moved a great deal in that regard, and we're very hopeful that as we move on with the Levies Act going to be implemented, obviously there'll be some time delays, we'll be able to get out of the hole that we have dig ourselves into moving forward because of the kind of the financial model that we have in place.
Yeah, I also want to first honorable Malabachi.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Do you have a way of tracking these suspended companies? Or do you suspend them on paper and then they continue and work as normal?
Yeah, and maybe just a follow-up in terms of the board. I mean, after receiving the AG's report, was there interaction between the AG and the board? Did the board then evaluate the outcomes, and was the action plans drawn up by the board to deal with the issues specifically in relation to the board? And I mean, is there written action plans available as we speak? I just want to get a sense of the functioning of the board.
Oh, definitely, Chairperson. We met with the board. We met with the AG to finalize their report. The records are available. They can be availed to the committee. And we've worked on the plan in terms of how those issues are addressed in terms of the turnaround strategy. Those can be made available to the committee. And we are confident that the plan that we've put in place will turn around the organization. Of course, the issue of the Levies Act is very critical moving forward.
Did go to other responses.
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps let me give a little bit of detail in terms of how the revenue is collected, and that would assist us in understanding where the actual problem is and how we intend to resolve it, as the Chairperson has said. Now, we build the industry based on the number of security officers that they employ. Currently, that's the model that we are using. And this model is in terms of the previous act, which is the legacy act that we had that was repealed. So what actually happens is that the industry have to disclose to us the number of people that they employ for us to be able to build them. Now, we've seen the challenge where the number of companies that we've registered that are said to be active, the majority of them are smaller companies. Now, these are companies that get registered for the sole purpose of tendering. Right? And the form of annual fees that we have is that you have to pay annually in advance. And you have to pay on a monthly basis for people that you employ. Now, obviously, we received large amounts in terms of those annual fees that are paid in advance. So if you look at the market share of the industry, sits in almost 85% of it sits in bigger companies that are quite few in number, and the rest of the smaller companies do not participate in the industry. So inherently that model will give us challenges. But how we are addressing it, Chairperson, is that we have segmented the industry in terms of the smallest companies, the medium and large companies. So they pay different fees in terms of what they have to pay. Now, obviously, as we said, that as they employ people, they have to actually let us know. But that number is the one that is not growing. If you look at the numbers that we've shown you from 2012 to now, you will see in the past 3 years the growth of the industry in terms of the numbers that are disclosed is not actually there. But if you look at the total database that we have of registered security officers, quite much bigger than the numbers that are disclosed to us. So one could actually say that there may be people that are employed elsewhere in the industry but have not been disclosed for various reasons. We know that, for instance, we've seen companies that would advertise for work for security officers. Security officers would then apply for work, give their CVs for that work, but the actual people that get employed are actually foreign nationals. And in that way, that's where we actually run short of disclosures. So there is an element of fraudulent disclosures as well, which actually limits the kind of revenue that we need to collect. But there is a lot of action that we're taking against companies that perform in that way. So what are we doing with the problem, Chairperson? We've seen this coming a year ago, and we started to look into the legal aspects of putting the Levies Act into action. You would recall that earlier in the year, we've also said to the committee that we'll be starting the process. We have started the process. We've engaged with National Treasury. We still have one or two outstanding meetings. Unfortunately, the tax people within the National Treasury were not available in the meetings that we scheduled, but we've met with Treasury. We've met with SARS to try to assist us and see in which way we can work together should we put the Levies Act into operation. We've met with the Civilian Secretariat. We've met with the Office of the Minister. In fact, as we speak, the Minister has approved a letter to the President asking him to proclaim the Levies Act into operation as of the 1st of April. Early this week, we met with the Special Advisor, Legal Advisor to the President to look at all the other issues relating to the implementation there before the matter is taken to the President. We then discovered that Finance Department are the ones that have to put together a memorandum outlining how actually the implementation has to be done because the Levies Act is a money bill. So we are in the process. As we speak, Civilian Secretariat is engaging with Treasury and the relevant people to draft the necessary memos so that we are able to implement. But however, the plan was to have the Act put into operation on the 1st of October this year, so that it gives at least 7 to 8 months to the industry to prepare for the 1st of April next year. Unfortunately, we've missed that, so we'll have to push back a little bit. And unfortunately, we can't push back by 3 months. We'll have to push back by 6 months. The reason for that is if we've made it 3 months, companies will choose not to pay us in the beginning of the financial year so that they wait for the implementation of the Levies Act, which might significantly affect us in terms of revenue. So we are forced at the moment to start the consultations on the annual fees again to implement for 6 months up until the President says this Act shall come into operation 6 months after the financial year. So we will see a change. We have done the numbers, Chairperson. The numbers look very good. If we implement the Levies Act, the model slightly changes. The companies will be built based on the monthly gross income. So even if you don't disclose to us the correct numbers in terms of how many people you employ, but you will have to disclose the correct numbers in terms of your revenue. So that will be based on revenue. So the smaller companies will actually be able to find a fair kind of process in terms of them paying. Currently, the industry is actually being funded by the smaller companies who don't actually even have a market in the industry itself. So we're hoping that the process of implementing this Act will come quicker. But as I say, Chairperson, if it gets implemented, things will look much better than they look today. So coming to the austerity measures, Chairperson, you've mentioned that the process of the leases and so on. Chairperson, remember that we have planned for these things, and the budget and the amounts that we've spent have been planned for. So the issues that have to do with the shortfall in terms of revenue have got nothing to do at all with regard to those plans, because those are budgeted plans. I think in the main what the CFO was trying to explain is that the issues that led to the deficit are actually what we call a technical accounting non-cash items, meaning that when you say that I'm going to be collecting money from this number of companies, right, you have to provide a certain percentage of your total debt that what if this percentage does not pay us? So as the revenue goes up, that provision also goes up. So what happens if you miss the target in terms of the collecting revenue? Those accounting calculations will actually account for that deficit. But we're not saying that to the committee that we would not improve because there is these issues. We constantly, as you look at the numbers, we've got 10% more revenue collected. We've missed by 8%, but we constantly make sure that we want to collect. There's a number of things that we've done this year to try to speed up that process.
So are you then disputing the finding or the fact statement that the AG made to us with regard to the issue of austerity measures? If it's not linked to the leases, I accept that. But what is then your plan with regard to austerity measures? I mean, if you're uncertain about the future income, even with the Levies Act on the horizon.
Chairperson, we have actually suspended quite a lot of our planned operations for the sole purpose that we would, you know, putting into operation those. There's a number of programs. You would recall that we had the ERP that we had to implement. We've actually pushed it back. It was supposed to have been implemented in March. We pushed it back to November this year. There's also a number of leases that we were supposed to have done in this current and last financial year, which we held back because of the same purpose. So there is quite a lot of measures. And if we look at the travel as well, we've cut significantly a lot. If we interrogate the expenditure compared to last year, you'll see that there's a significant reduction in terms of that quarter by quarter. So those are the measures that we're taking. So there is quite a lot of action that we're taking towards that. So as I said, we're improving the situation. If I can move to the other questions, allow me to restate the questions that I might have missed. Honorable Mulevati asked about the process of accrediting I think training institutions. Maybe the same question is linked to the clarity on the lifting of the moratorium on training institutions. Previously, back in 2008, there was a moratorium on the accreditation of new training providers. The reason for that moratorium was when CIRA started to work with SACITA to bring the standard of training within the industry to the national qualification framework level. And therefore, as you might know, that the CIRA grades are not at the level of national qualification framework. So there was a lot of development that took place in terms of the upskilling of the courses, the skills plans, and so on and so on. But what really happened is that there's a number of providers that were accredited to do that kind of training within the SACITA space, but there was no growth in terms of those that could do training in terms of the grades. So what we see is there is a slowdown in terms of the entrance of new people, because the SACITA-based training obviously take longer to train. So if you need security guards quicker, you can't have those, you can't wait for 3 months to train a security guard before you can deploy one. So the upliftment of the accreditation was to ensure that we have much more bigger pool in terms of training providers that can train entry-level security officers that want to enter the industry. And obviously we're not saying that the new process of the higher standard of training should be discontinued. So those who want to upskill themselves will always have to go up and upskill themselves. The other question was, what do female security officers do? From our understanding, they do all the work that is done by male counterparts, including guarding, patrolling, and all the work. I'm not. Perhaps one can speak of the commonly done. You see them in other sectors other than other sectors. In the retail sector, for instance, you see a lot more security, female security officers. In this electronic sector, where you deal with CCTV, you see more of them in control rooms than in the guarding sector, but they are also in the close protection sectors, and they are all in other sectors. I'm not quite sure how many we have in the CIT sector, given the kind of environment that it is, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mulevati. Walker.
Will that include dock handling and?
Chairperson, yes, we do have female security officers that have been trained in dock handling. Chairperson, maybe just one last question, answer on the this, what is the status on the on Acadia? You would recall a few months ago we came and said that this is the plan that we have. That plan is in place. We have actually set the process of actually trying to get experts to do the drafting for us and so on. We have moved Acadia satellite office finally into the CBD. There's a new office, so we can now deal with the Acadia as it is. But obviously, once again, it will depend on the availability of funds. Let me allow perhaps the CFO to deal with the other question regarding the financial performance before I get to the other questions.
Thank you. The questions were related from Sambel, number 36, 37, 38. I just want to unpack them and just to for us to clear the thing. When they refer, maybe just before I start answering, when we were discussing this with the AG prior to the finalization of it, we did a system thinking where is the process of why is this thing like that, because even the council was there where we wanted to understand why was the issue written in the annual report like this. For an example, I'll go to number 33. The accounting authority inadequately reviewed annual performance report. If you recall, we've got one material finding under program 3, where average time taken, that one. So after that, because we did not, they raised a material finding related to that finding, then that finding will have a ripple effect of saying, yes, you say you have developed an action plan to address this performance, yes. However, it did not. That's why they say inadequate. You have an action plan, and all other action plans have been proven to be effective, but this one didn't make it through the cut. That's why we say to you it was inadequate. You see, there's a word used, inadequately. So the oversight committee, internal audit, FinCo, all the social and ethics, and the board, in terms of, if I'm analyzing it, it's 98% performance, it's good. There's this 2% that they're lashing the council and management on it, where they have a material finding on one KPI that is qualified, and they were not happy with it. And when I move to the other one of number 34, inadequate oversight regarding performance, you see, it's still at on top of the other one that you were not thorough in reviewing this KPI of average time taken. If you remember, there was a material emphasis of matter on that one KPI. So everything that is in here, it relates to that one KPI. The action plan that was proposed by management and the root causes were not effective on that other one. So when I move to the next one of 36, proper record keeping, it relates to the time taken for management to, because at the end of the audit, they assess how long did we take to give them information. Because we've got regional offices, it took longer. That's why they would say that document management is not effective. Make sure that the documents are closer. And the other one of the proper record keeping, you see, it's a system thinking. When you don't provide them information, then they will have another one of saying this one. And then when you go to number 38 is unique because we've got material impairment which relates to provision, which is non-compliance and fruitless, those two material things that will stay with us forever, material impairment, which is when you raise debt, when you raise an invoice, you should provide in terms of accounting. So it will look like management is not doing anything. But in terms of the financial, and that's why they say material uncertainties, because we are not certain that we'll collect from this person with 0 to 5 employees who's not getting a tender. Where is he going to get the money? That's why it's an emphasis every year. When we were concluding, when we were doing this with them, because we met with the council, the management, and the board, we asked them that, yes, we see these two findings that is haunting us every year. When are we going to get a clean audit? That they said to us, this material uncertainty is the one that is holding you from a clean audit, but it's inherent nature of the business. Because we went to Sanral also, we took their financial statement and say, because we are, people are not paying it all, how are you classifying it? Is it flagged like this in their report? It is flagged like that. So it's an inherent finding, but we must reduce it to an acceptable level, and we must raise a fund to cover the provision raised. So those three, we are not saying they're not valid, but I just wanted to give you the background where they are coming from, that this is how, yeah, this is. We did not do well, sir. It was mentioned here. The agreed turnaround time, it was 3 days. However, we did not make it on time. That's why it made it to the audit report, that we had challenges in streamlining the information from regions and what. So what we have done this year, that immediately before they filed, they scanned them to head office so that we have real-time information to reduce the number of days taken to submit information to the AG.
The question is, I mean, in terms of maybe the ICT environment, I mean, aren't you able from head office to access it? I mean, why these long delay? I don't understand that.
Chairperson, I think what also makes the problem worse in terms of the retrieval of information is that we are currently doing it manually. Applications are filed manually with Metro File as our service provider. So whenever there is a sampling of an audit, we have to go to Metro File and request the specific file, because we've registered an individual, the auditors have given you these number of IDs that they want to see. So you submit to Metro File. We have a turnaround time. We, as the CFO said earlier on, we're reviewing currently the SLA so that we can find better ways of dealing with it. But what are we going to do with it in the future? You would recall that we are implementing the ERP towards November. Part of the modules that we have is a document management system which will automate all these processes so that we have better response and effective way in which we can manage it in the future.
Honorable Schlomo?
Maybe just one thing, you know, maybe CFO, how can you help us? Because I think committee members are quite correct to for us to be able to have full certainty moving forward to say, if, for example, the AG's office is saying, in terms of your liabilities, you have so much exceeding your assets, I think about 30 million or something like that. Is it maybe due to the delays in collection or some systemic, how can you just, because that will actually, if then that escalates, can escalate, noting that we are in the economic meltdown as a country. And you are correctly raising that most of your clients depends on tenders, which means during the economic meltdown, this tender base decreases as well. And the probability of escalation is more. How can you then come up with a model that will ensure that this finding that they talk of here, of your liabilities exceeding your assets, can be closed down in order to ensure that you don't reach, you don't get grounded as as an institution.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey, as well.
Thank you, Chair. Just to follow up, from the CFO's reply on the questions about findings 36 to 38. So if I understood correctly, that means that the use of that language about not having proper record keeping or record management, it sounds like you were saying that was more a commentary on the AG's experience of getting information during the course of the audits around information retrieval and that sort of thing, but it doesn't speak to the integrity or functionality of the actual system that you use in the core business. So reports from inspections, checking up on status of applications and so on. So it's not a comment on that, on the day-to-day operational. It was about, okay. Yeah, because the concern I had, Chair, is that just the face value reading of their statements suggests that the inherent information management in the authority was not up to scratch. Yeah.
Maybe just also to get a view, because of the finding of the AG, was there a change in the modus operandi of the steering committee for the next audit? I just want to know, are you going to change your approach, or is it just going to be the service provider in terms of providing specific files? I just want to know about your approach. Thank you. Let's go to the first, maybe the deputy, the acting chair, yes, of the board.
I won't be answering that one, Chair, but I want to emphasize the issue around the issue of our collection, because that's an elephant in the room. How do you collect? And this cannot be separated from transformation issue and the program that has started of transformation in the industry. And I've been surprised when I go around the country and engage small companies how angry they are, first of all, not understanding our role as CIRA, but also how angry are they towards CIRA, because before they, let's say there's a tender at the Department of Health, they must prove that they're on good standing, so they must pay a fee. So the fact that they have to pay us before they tender, they are very angry because they say that that doesn't guarantee them that they get a job, you see. And many of them, you know, these companies are all over the country. And that's something that in our engagement around issue of transformation, we should not neglect, that there are many people who are setting up companies of 5, 3, 20 security guards who are hoping that they'll get a slice in this industry, but they're not getting it. And there are about almost 9,000 companies that we have, and the majority of them are the ones that are not getting any job. And they have to pay for them so that they are in a position to be registered and be eligible to apply for the job. So those are the realities, Chairperson, that we face. Hence, the issue of changing how we charge is very, very critical moving forward, not just for survival of CIRA, but for this industry in the country. And I got a bit worried when I engaged the colleagues at the Department of Health in KZN after that hostage drama. And I'm hoping that the chairperson and the committee will engage with that department and others who are facing that crisis. Department of Health, as an example, in KZN, spend about $700 million on security. And I was surprised that in their companies that provide service for them, there are about 200 companies. And I was asking this person, how do you manage these invoices on a monthly basis, you know, in all this, you know, because I think that's very costly also doing that kind of issues. But it's trying to please all the small companies, you know, because it means that in site one, when there are 5 guards that are needed, they issue to Mbubane company. In site 4, where there are about 15 securities, they issue other. So I'm not sure how sustainable that process is and how long they can manage that kind of process, but it goes down to the issue of transformation in the industry.
Acting Chairperson, Director.
Okay. I'll respond to the question asked by Ntate Mhlongo. The model that we are going to, we have noticed that if we keep the model the way it is, when there's economic meltdown, when the people don't have interest or start, when they move their business from security business, then we'll have higher provision. But if we can introduce the Levies Act will no longer focus on a person registering only. We'll now focus on a person who has a tender. The person who doesn't have a tender will not form part of our provision. So the person that we are going to pursue will have potential to pay us. Then we can push that person. But what we have been proven now that we'll push Matou's company where we know, you realize Matou has registered but doesn't have. It's like you want to get water from the stone. But the model, if it's changed, then we'll have. And we want to also to partner with SARS that we'll see from your SARS filing that you have money. Then SARS can also, because we have been communicating with them, so SARS can assist us also to collect from you. So the model will just save us when we have economic meltdown. The few people that are going to benefit from the economic benefit, they'll be able to pay. The people that cannot, that have registered, they are not going to form part of our provision. And in terms of the question raised by the chair, in terms of the audit steering committee, we have developed a combined assurance model where we've got experts in our FinCo, and then in terms of performance information, we have stakeholder and core committees that are looking very closely in this critical like program 3, because it has been coming. Yes, last year we have the KPI was not the same, but it's still the same thing. And for us, it looks like an easy thing to do. We have segmented ourselves. There's a person dedicated under registration. There's processes. We looked at internally in the capacity, so we've beefed up registration. We have looked at registration processes. We are, as management, we're driving ourselves to ensure that information is readily and it's accurate. So on quarterly basis, we have internal audit focusing on program 3, not neglecting another ones, because if you focus on program 3, you might see program 1 and program 2 lapsing, but I think 60% of the effort are being channeled to program 3, and then the others are given much lesser effort. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chief. Director.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me address one of the outstanding questions by Honorable Mlevati, reasons why we reject applications for inquiries for firearm applications. One of the reasons those are rejected is when they apply, they provide certain information to the Central Firearm Registry. That information has to be validated with us. So we often find that the directors that are sitting in the documentation that they submitted that side are not the same directors that are sitting at CIPRO, for instance, the company's registration office, for instance. And we also find discrepancies in terms of addresses, quite a lot of things. If the information that's provided is not the same as the information in our position, we'd obviously reject those, amongst others. Those are the reasons. Moving to two questions from Honorable Mbele that are also outstanding. There was a question about what are we doing about unregistered security companies, whether we are aware of the complaints that are coming from the medium companies. We receive quite a lot of complaints regarding uncompetitive conduct by other members of the industry. In the main, Chairperson, the problem might not go away. The main problem with competition in the industry is that it's a highly, first of all, highly, highly competitive environment. The competition is mainly around pricing. There is the statutory kind of prices that are set in terms of payment of security officers and so on. So those, obviously, that can afford overheads, if I were to put it that way, will price down because they have the advantage of infrastructure. So they don't necessarily, they can't necessarily compete with the others. But the main complaint also with regards to the smaller companies, these companies that are pricing down, it's not necessarily that they're not registered. They are registered with us. Is that because they are actually undercutting in order to survive in the market. What do we do with unregistered security companies? We arrest those that operate illegally, And we've dealt with quite a lot of them. The numbers you will see, most of the arrests that we do mainly are those companies that operate illegally. I cannot recall of any of those companies that have been reported to us that we did not act on. Those are the cases that we do almost on a daily basis. Maybe coming to the questions by Honorable Kola Barnett, regarding specifically the issue of record keeping, I don't think that the issues that relates to us not being able to respond to complaints in time have got to do with record keeping. I must admit that our complaints mechanism is not properly functioning. We are currently reviewing the complaints mechanism where we are able to come up with commitments in terms of how long it will take us to deal with complaints. We want to also be able to segment complaints because a lot of complaints that we are receiving at CIRA are not necessarily complaints that needs to be dealt with by CIRA. Most of the complaints, for instance, are complaints that needs to go to the CCMA. Most of the complaints are complaints that needs to go to the Department of Labor. Some of them are complaints related to pensions that needs to go to the pension adjudicator and so on and so on. But complaints that has to do with us, we deal with those. But as I say, I give you an undertaking. We've recently reviewed the policy. You should see a change in terms of how we deal with complaints in the nearer future. It is indeed a long time. I admit, Chairperson, it is indeed a long time, and we will specifically investigate why we haven't actually responded to that specific complaint. We are also receiving quite a lot of complaints, Chairperson. If we look at this year specifically, we're receiving quite a lot of complaints. And the reason why the complaints are escalating is also because we've done a lot of marketing in terms of informing members of the public what is the role of the industry, what is the role of the regulator. And therefore, from that angle, a lot of complaints are coming in. And as we said, we will come up with better mechanisms how to deal with it. The other question was around the legal cases. Maybe let me explain, Chairperson, the aspect about us being sued. It's quite a number of cases. And the main are cases where people would want to sue us for all sorts of reasons, and then in the main, they then eventually abandon those cases. So if you look at some of the cases, they date back from 2011, 2015, and so on. People take us to court. When we defend, they don't come back. And the question is, what do you do with those cases? You know, because summonses have been served, the parties are not moving, so you can only move when there's... So every year we look at those cases, we assess and we say to the AG, this is what we need to do. But these are not necessarily cases that are alarming. We don't have a lot of litigation against CIRA just like you have with the police. We have a list of them. We can give you a list of them to see for yourself what sort of cases we have. In terms of the Amendment Act, the latest that I have, Chairperson, when we met with the legal advisor of the President a few days ago, there was also discussions about that. There is unfortunately still an exchange of information in between the civilian secretariat and other stakeholders, and it looks like there's still consideration in terms of what should be done, whether the act should be sent back to Parliament, whether the President should be advised to sign, but there is quite considerable ongoing effort to deal with that act as we speak. That's the latest that I have here.
Honorable
Shlomo,
you're welcome.
I don't know whether then the CEO is done, Chairperson, but there is a point that the acting chair raised, because over the holidays, Chairperson, I listened quite attentively. I think the Premier of KZN had a number of meetings with security companies, and I happened also to engage in one of the radio stations whereby these small companies were actually lambasting CIRA, and not because of CIRA's problems, but you can see that it's a very broad problem that I think we as a parliament will have to engage on, because they regard CIRA to say, when CIRA is discharging its duties of collecting on the collection side as a punitive act on them, because they say, no, how do you rip us when we haven't even attained some job and all that, but every year Sarah will come and knock at our door. And so you can see the dilemma there, because Sarah has got a statutory obligation to actually then do these collections. But on the other hand, so how do we then create a system that will ensure that Sarah sustains these small upcoming or small companies rather than just yielding a stick on them according to what they are supposed to be doing? Not that Sarah is doing wrong, Sarah is following the law of what he is actually put before them. But so I could just say that, and I think the premier of KZN, I thought I was going to go to his office and just see maybe the acting chair comes from that province can also get that report, because to me it seems to be a quite comprehensive report that can actually help this parliament to say what type of an engagement will have to be done, even if it needs be some repealing of some sections of the rules that brought about existence of Sarah, so that it can actually be able to assist these companies so that they don't actually then resort to illegalities in order to create space for them to get work. Because that's in the end, Jefferson, I found out to be that some of them resort to illegal actions in order to create space for them to generate some money for them, some cash flows, because they don't get job and all that thing. So it's a very serious matter. I thought maybe if, I wonder if maybe the premier of that province has got that report, but when they engaged live on one of the community radios there, I could actually then understand far better the problems that Sarah is faced with. I think it's quite big. It needs some open-minded approach from our side to say, what is it that we can do in order to ensure that we unlock these challenges? I think they are bigger than Sarah itself. I don't see Sarah dealing with this, not unless this parliament can be able to come to the rescue of them in one way or the other in order to ensure that we unlock this particular problem that they are faced with, and these organizations which are part of their what you call the market base that Sarah presides on, is able to actually then deliver on what Sarah is supposed to achieve. So that's why then I thought I need to agree with the acting chair, because I happen to understand that thing far better when I engage with these people during the holidays. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Yes, you can continue, Director, and the team for responses.
Then I think we have concluded most of the answers to the questions. First round.
Right.
Questions.
Let's go to round two. I just got in the introduction forwarded by the Honourable Minister of Police, Honourable Becky Tweele, of the annual report. He says another grey area that I've instructed the authority to look into is the avalanche of illegal firearms in possession of some private security service providers. Every weapon should be accounted for, especially after the spate of gun-toting incidents by some close protection service protectors. So I just want to get an indication, what is the current status? Have there been action by Sarah investigating? What is the current situation? Then secondly, I think it's an issue we also raised at previous interactions with Sarah and the board, is sometimes high-profile cases and press reports that some security companies are front for organized crime. You know, is there any movement, investigations with regard to that? Can we maybe just get an indication with regard to that? And then with regard to the issue of NQF training what is the current initiatives regarding yourselves, Sasita, if we can just have feedback. Other members? Honorable Mulubat.
Actually, mine is not a new one. I think my question was not responded to, not unless just when I was out. What are the reasons for the firearms that were not recommended?
Thank you, Chair. Just two more from my side in this round. The first is whether Sierra and the management have a sense or a figure of what is the percentage of participation by active registered firms in the stakeholder liaison forums that are run. I know it's going to be a difficult figure to arrive at because a large number of the registered are actually inactive because, as the director has pointed out, many of those registrations are for tendering purposes. So it's hard to know what the actual real figure of active registered baseline number, I guess, is, and therefore from there. But if you were able to have a rough sense based on what you know to be the active registered, and then the figures of those who've been coming to the stakeholder liaison forums. What's that percentage of active partaking happening? And then my second question had to do with... Oh, I've lost it. Yes. Thank you. Because I noted under the communication and stakeholder report that there was talk of being part of many events and platforms of forming partnership between private security and SAPS. There's one here about a meeting in Magaliesburg, for example. And I'm just curious to know what is the contents or the key points of the inputs and the guidance that CIRA gives to the formation of those partnerships, because I think that's going to be a key component going forward in promoting safety broadly is those SAPS private security partnerships. So what's the kind of framework, the inputs and the guidance that CIRA would share towards that process? Thanks, Chair.
Got it. Yeah, maybe just two additional ones from my side. In terms of the 265-plus staff members, what is your vetting profile? And then in the peace and stability environment, the president also, since he assumed office, have put the issue of lifestyle audits very front on the table. And in terms of your board, your executive members, is there any efforts also from you, from yourselves, to comply to that important mechanism to improve accountability? Thank you, members.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question related to the issue of firearms in regard to what the Minister has mandated us to do. Chairperson, what we have done so far is to start to look at in what form can we actually bring about regulations that would then dictate which of the companies get issued with which firearms and where do they use them, because if you look at the Act actually allows us to come up with such regulations, but it is an effort that we have to work with SAPS. I'm quite aware that there is a number of meetings that have been initiated so far where we are working with SAPS. It is also an instruction that also came through via the MINMEC committees that we have to look into issues, how can we really come up with policy directives as well as regulations. So we are onto it. We hope that very soon we will be publishing draft regulations with regard to that aspect, Chairperson. In terms of the cases regarding the cases of organized crime, Chairperson, we have continuously worked with the Hawks in terms of them looking into certain companies that are involved in organized crime, and constantly we meet with them, constantly we report cases to them as well. So in so far as that aspect is concerned, I must say that we work well together in terms of dealing with those. We also we need assistance. We actually deal with those assistance, work with within that, those parameters. The NQF training, where we are still on course working with Sasita Chairperson. What we've, however, emphasized, Chairperson, is that we need to take the lead as the regulator, as per the Act, in terms of making sure that the standards of training, as well as training that is provided in the industry, is then recognized by us. Because the Act says we have to ensure that any training that is coming to the industry is recognized. Why I'm saying so, Chairperson, we have training. We have training that gets done at a Sasita level where we are not involved. And later on, you find those people that undergo those training will have to come and want to be recognized, and which is a problem. We cannot always look at issues of prior learning and recognition while it's issues that we could have dealt with upfront. So we are working very well. We will be reviewing our memorandum of understanding with Sasita very soon. We are aware that Sasita has appointed a new board, there's new committees, there's a lot of traction in terms of dealing with the issues of training, and the chambers have been reconstituted afresh. We also have some representation in some of those chambers as well, as we speak in the new board. So we are working well together in regard to that aspect. The aspect regarding the participation of companies, it's quite a very difficult one to answer, Honorable Mbele, Chairperson, because we have different forums. But I must say that in all our forums, there is a mix of attendance of the old companies that have been active as well as the new. We have specific forums where we engage newcomers in the industry in terms of taking them through what are the pitfalls, what can be they do in terms of compliance and so on. So, but attendance of the new comers is quite very well in all the forums that we engage with the industry, to an extent that we've never had issues with attendance. Most of the time we have issues with over attendance, influx of people that we're engaging. The key issues in regard to partnerships, Chairperson, you'll recall that 3 years ago we have published a monograph. That monograph was specifically a research around partnerships between private security industry as well as state security agencies such as the police and so on. So what we did in that monograph later on, we came up with a policy position which the board approved, which we took to the civilian secretariat at the time, which outlined what can be done to promote those partnerships. But in the main in that report we are saying, and also in the press, we're saying SAPS must take the lead in terms of dealing with those partnerships. The report is saying those partnerships have a way of contributing to crime prevention. They actually work, we've actually outlined a few of the partnerships that have been done in the past that are still currently working. As we speak, there's so much effort that has been done since the issue of CIT to reignite those partnerships. I'm aware that there is a meeting that will be taking place very soon between SAPS, ourselves, as well as defense. I'm aware we've met with the Reserve Bank, we've met with SAPS, we're meeting with other agencies as well. So those partnerships are taking place. So there is also guidelines in terms of how they can be done. Thank you, Chair.
Both Deputy Ekuchi.
From you, Chairperson, around the issue of the lifetime. What we've done as an organization is that we have asked from board members and also senior management in terms of declaring their registration with companies, which company they sit on, to double check whether they're doing any business with the organization. And there's been high compliance in that regard, but now we move to the next level for all staff members. And we have been very clear as a board in terms of those. I think there were few, I think percentage was low, but there were one or two who didn't comply, you know, in terms of saying that we need to make sure that those who do not respond, we find ways and means of doing consequences. But this is not just people themselves declaring. As an organization, we go out also and check against their IDs with the registration of companies, etc. So we have that information available. But we'll make sure that all staff members eventually in the coming year we check with the registration of companies.
That all responses. The new CPF strategy, community policing strategy of the South African police that's been developed. Now, private security will play an important part of the new holistic approach. I mean, more role players, also in the CSF environment. I just want to know whether CIRA was involved or asked for any input by SAPS or the civilian secretariat on that new CPF model, maybe part of the forums or discussions. Yes, Onumbele.
Thank you, Chair. Just a final question from me in terms of a recent and ongoing issue of public interest, which is rail safety. We know that PRASA in most instances is contracting private security for train stations and rail infrastructure. But the trouble is that either there's an under deployment, so under allocation of the required personnel, and that's why there's the vulnerabilities around theft and robbery on trains at train stations, as well as cable theft, and now the arson incidents with carriages being set alight. So I'm just wondering if, given the major role played by private security operators in the rail environment, if that's an issue on CIRA's radar as to how to promote or enhance the training or whatever the case might be in private security on trains, at train stations, etc. That's it.
Thank you. Any other members? Thank you, members. Yes, Director.
Thank you, Chairperson. In regard to the first question, yes, we are involved in the discussions on CPF strategy. Actually, I was supposed to meet with the Secretary this week here in Cape Town regarding the very same aspect as well. He highlighted that he wanted to engage me on the CPF strategy. I think regarding the question of rail safety, we are aware of the role that is played by the private security industry. We are also aware that there are a number of problems in terms of the vandalizing of trains, arson, and so on. We have recently been contacted by PRASA to try to engage us in terms of what can be done to improve the situation. So we are yet to have those discussions with them. And we have in the past highlighted that we are willing to assist in terms of regularizing the numbers that they want to have to make sure that there is enough security around the issue of trains and rail transport. So in terms of training, we will look into those discussions when we meet with PRASA in the near future.
Thank you, honorable members. Thank you also to the acting chair, the director, and the delegation from CIRA for their input and presentation on the annual report. We take note of the progress. We take note also of the unqualified audit. Of course, clean audit must be the main role. It's important also that the executive authority, accounting authority, assume its role, in terms of the prescript. So we're also looking forward to that, and also a general improvement. But I think also the matter that is quite important is the financial model, and we're looking forward to the Levies Act issue as well. So there's still a number of issues that needs, urgent attention, but in general, I think it's a good report. So thank you very much, honourable members, for your participation. We will resume our activities on Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock. As I've indicated, we'll try on Monday, Tuesday, distribute the draft copies of the reports for members to study, and that we need move effectively on Wednesday morning in adopting the relevant reports. So thank you very much. This meeting is closed.
Oh,